There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Midday Mobile. I'm Cameron Smith. You guys usually hear me on Wednesdays with Sean. This is neither Wednesday, and Sean's not here, but I am, and I'm glad to be with you guys. I absolutely love Lower Alabama. Dauphin Island in particular has a special place in my heart and my family's heart. And as I've mentioned to Sean previously, we are almost fresh out of Gulf Coast Seafood up here at the Smith residence. We're going to have a good show today. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot that's on my mind. I'm going to give you guys, I saw it already on the text line. Y'all can call in there if you want to. All right. It's 251-343-0106. The phone and text line is 251-343-0106. Dalton's behind the board. He's got everything going, but I'll respond to the text line between the breaks as I can to chat with you guys. And it's Friday. I want the show to be a show that y'all enjoy. We're going to go through the election 2024 update. I've seen it already that's something that y'all have wanted to see who are hanging around from Jeff's show. Some interesting develops there. The reinvention of Kamala Harris is going as anticipated with the media. It's a reprisal of a previous campaign, but it might not be the one you're thinking about. So we'll talk a little bit about that, talking about what the dynamics are in that race. Talk about the media having its orders and knowing what's going on. And I want to lead off the show by giving you a little bit of my background, but then talking about, y'all remember when Katie Britt did that State of the Union response and the media set her on fire? They went after her. There's no crying in politics. I understand that. But what's she been up to since then? And why isn't the media talking about that? That's the kind of stuff that we'll get into today. But first, let me tell you a little bit about what I do, where I do it. I've been a columnist for AL.com and the papers in Alabama for as long as I can remember. I appreciate all of y'all that read it over there. And I appreciate the jokes about being in conservative closet over there. I understand that from time to time, AL.com may not have the most conservative perspectives. That's where I try to do that. As y'all know, particularly those of y'all who know me, I am a conservative who is in the old school tradition. Limited government, free markets, the rule of law, personal responsibility. I actually don't want the government to fix my life or yours because they do a horrible job at it. I don't care whether it's Democrats or Republicans. I'm just suspicious of anybody that says, as Reagan pointed out, I'm from the government and here to help. Count me skeptical when it comes to the political class. It's very easy to talk about Democrats as a conservative and say, hey, look at those guys, they're terrible. I would encourage all of us as Republicans and conservatives who engage talk radio to say, hey, what about the guys that say they're on my side? What have they done for me lately? What's the game plan here? And I think that's where the conversation really needs to start. I'm also at the Tennessean. I work, my day job is at a company called Thanks, where we grow business with gratitude. The idea is, hey, you appreciate the people that you work with, right? Why not send them Starbucks coffee for the week? Or during the holidays when they have parties they got to go to, why not send them an Uber ride? There are plenty of ways to express appreciation. And somebody told me this the other day, that appreciation left unexpressed is a lot like wrapping Christmas presents and leaving them in the closet. Don't do that. We're at a time where, let's be honest, people are weird. COVID left a lot of people weird. The internet has strung people out, made them anxious and strange. Your business relationships and your personal relationships are more important than they've ever been. So tell people you appreciate them. You don't have to use a company like Thanks, but you do need to do that. And it's something that I forget more often than not. And I'm constantly trying to get better at that. I also am a partner in a media company. You guys have been fantastic about going to watch The Ballad of Davy Crockett. That's a project that's been years in the making that I realized, and some of my friends realized, we complain about Hollyweird. We complain about the stuff that they're dumping into our living rooms, and yet most of us don't do anything about it. I felt personally convicted about that and joined together with some investors and other creative folks to create a movie. It's a historiodrama. It is not a documentary. It is a historiodrama about Davy Crockett and how he came to befriend the Indians. And it's designed to be a fun movie with your kids. We're not hoping for any awards out of Hollywood. We don't need their recognition, but we want to come up with stuff for you and your families. And I'm going to continue to try to do those things. And I'll let you guys know as we have more projects. I'm also kind of Radio Grandpa today. I'm here to get you keyed up about the topics of the day and what's going on. And then I get to hand you back to Sean. The big topic that's on everybody's mind right now to start off with is back to school. My kids are right there. We've got some in private, some in public. We're all going back to school. And the challenge that creates is I start paying attention to what's happening. And it's usually out of sight, out of mind during the summer, right? We're going, the schedule's crazy, kids are up late, they're running around outside doing all kinds of wild stuff. The thing that struck me lately, and I'm going to sound like a complete Luddite here, somebody that hates technology, because I'm increasingly getting there. I'm tired of the technology being the answer because I don't think it is, and I think it's making our kids weirder and less equipped to do what they need to do. When you look at the developmental research that's out there and it talks about the impact of just cell phones on our kids' lives, it's never good. There's very little research out there that says this is a net positive. Now, there is some that says, well, if it's held back to less than 2 hours a day of screen time, then the net impact's probably negligible. Do this for me. Go look at your kids' cell phone usage. Just pick up their phone and look at it. I did this in Sunday school. I just said, I was teaching freshman boys. And I said, hey guys, I'll put mine on the table. Let's do this. Let's see how much screen time just on your phones you're consuming right now. I had one kid 10 hours a day. He was attached to that thing. And that's something that I think is really impacting students everywhere. And at a minimum, pushing that out of the classroom, at a minimum, saying, hey, why don't we focus on texts? My kids right now, they're almost totally online. They have, and it's supposed to be restricted and all of this stuff, but it's digital, as if this is inherently good. Contrast that with my kids who are in a private school with no technology, where it's literally banned from the classroom and it's paper and books. The results are clear to me. I end up with a more focused child, able to understand what's going on. And the children that are with the screens, less disciplined, less focused when it comes to academics. Now, I understand there's differences between kids, but I think that's what we're missing. And when you start looking at, now layer on top of this, not just the academic distractions, but how kids treat each other in the virtual wasteland. Look, go to X, go over there. That's where we're, it is a void of people screaming, and people don't treat people well on social media. We know that, we see that, we hear about that. And yet we wonder, well, what's happening? Why are our kids struggling? So my take on it is, as we go back to school, we need to have serious conversations about technology use. We need to have conversations about how our specific kids are using this stuff. And we need to think, is this the best path forward? Is technology inherently good? Again, I'm not anti-technology, but I'm getting that way because I just don't see that the aggregate benefits for my kids and yours are giving us the results that we want. And unless we want to continue that and go down this road where we have this, I don't know, let's call it what it is, zombie nation, where folks are just wandering around. I'll tell you guys some very humorous story that happened at the neighborhood pool that's related to, well, I'll just hold the story. You guys got to hear this because it's great evidence of what these phones do, particularly to young men. We got to take a break. This is Midday Mobile, and I'm Cameron Smith. Come on back.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, guys. I'm Cameron Smith, filling in for Sean. I'm excited to have you with me on this Friday, August 9th. On the text line, 251-343-0106, Greg makes a great point. The other problem about technology and cell phones is that all schools give a computer screen to the children during the day. Then after school, they get on their phones. So school's not a break from it, in spite of the fact that the goal is noteworthy. We're trying to educate these kids. Greg, I'll add to that. I think part of the problem is kids are on the screens and then they come home. And I'll use my family as an example. Their homework is related to that screen, right? So they may be on the laptop, and I actually discovered this last year, and I nipped it in the bud, but one of my sons had installed a virtual private network to go around the school's firewalls on the device and was watching YouTube. He wasn't doing homework. I thought he was very studious until I realized, man, no teenage boys actually study that much. And the truth was, he was watching YouTube. So we fixed that. We addressed that. We talked about, like, hey, you're being misleading here. You know what you're doing. And he said, yeah. And so we worked through that. But that's where I have, in my home, the devices that I have here, I control. I have the network. I can see it. The only ones that I don't control are the ones that come from school. The boys are smart. They know that. And let's be honest. I'm 42. When I was a teenager, I knew technology much better than my parents. And as much as I think, well, I grew up with the internet, I'm tech savvy. My kids are light years better at technology than I am. They just are. What we grew up on, those of us who are parents now, is nothing compared to what they can engage. And don't even get me started on trying to just play whack-a-mole with pornography and just bad garbage content. It's really, really tough. And so the school actually makes that worse. I actually had I had a moment at church where when I was teaching the boys, the Sunday school lesson was a video on YouTube. And I approached the youth minister and I said, hey, what are we doing here? We've got teachers here. We've got parents. We've got other folks that can engage these kids. And he said, well, this is how kids consume information. And so if this makes them more likely to consume information, we want to at least give it a shot. I still adamantly disagree with him that making more screen time part of our kids' lives is good spiritually. I think he's dead wrong on that. But it's literally everywhere. So, you know, I recognize that's a bit of a rant, but I don't think we can mess around with this in the ways that we have. And let's be honest, a lot of this is because of our own hypocrisy. Yeah, I'm talking to you because I'm talking to me too. The phones in our hands feel like they're becoming more and more of an extension. I had a moment the other day in my truck where I was driving into the office. I wasn't per se on my phone, but it was just hanging out in my hand. I wasn't looking at it. I wasn't doing anything. It was just there. Why? Because I've habituated myself to that. I threw it in the floorboard of the passenger side because it was so concerning to me. And I think a lot of parents feel like I don't have good self-control when it comes to the technology in my life. So how can I ask my kids to do it? Get over the hypocrisy and frankly, do better. We can. Here's a little tip. If you're listening to the sound of my voice, this is the easiest thing you can do. I don't need some grand scheme or software or anything to tackle the problem of screens everywhere in the home and in the community. It's a little thing. Somebody a couple months ago gave me this trick. Turn your phone to grayscale. Just do it. It might be on your phone. It might be bedtime mode or something like that. Turn it to grayscale. Take away the binging, buzzing notifications other than when somebody calls you. It's okay to have the ringer on. But turn it to grayscale. And I promise you'll start treating your phone like you treat any given book. In fact, you probably start treating it like a rotten apple. I've realized that I leave my phone around more and I'm not constantly looking at it. And I started asking some people who are tech savvy folks who are at that space between psychology and technology. And what they said, and I didn't understand this, was that the vibrant colors on our screens these days have the same impact that bright colored flowers have on bees, butterflies. You know why they go there? Because they see those colors and they're attracted to them. The vibrancy of the colors on our screen and stuff like that attracts us. So if you get rid of that, it's just like a book or anything else. I know that sounds wild, but just try it. See what ends up happening. It will truly, truly shock you. I want to get into an opinion piece I just dropped over at AL.com a little while ago. Reagan has a Big Tent champion in Alabama. Yeah, you heard that right. Big Tent champion. At the time, not Big Ten, Big Tent. And it was interesting that I got into this because I started hearing all about, well, you know, our country's divided. It is. I get that. You know, no qualms there. But why do we always focus on the super, to use a Democratic word of the day, weird aspects of our politics? The crazy, the wild, and never figure out that we do have some high points. We do have some folks that are saying, you know what, we have a divided country, but we can find common ground, not on everything, maybe not on the big ticket items, but on some items that matter. And I had a conversation with my friend and Senator Katie Britt saying, I'm trying to do the right thing and engage in things that matter to people in Alabama, but the focus tends to always be on the crazy and wild. And, you know, I get it. Even with my friends, Gary Palmer is a friend and mentor of mine. And I'm not skeptical, but I am cautious because I know with people who I support and I like politically, I may have blind spots. And when I have blind spots, then I might say and do things that are not critical, that I'm not checking myself. And as I started the show with, we have to have the ability to check ourselves when it comes to politicians. I think that that's part of the big problem is sometimes we check ourselves so much that we don't talk about the good things that people we like end up doing. And with Senator Britt, what I saw was somebody who's saying, I'm going to lead where it's hard. I'm going to find that common ground so I can actually legislate. So I can actually move the ball. We're going to talk about, when we get back on the other side of this break, what some of those things are. We're not going to have the stupid, weird, crazy, macabre. We're going to have, hey, when you put your head down and get after it, what does this look like? and what should we be excited about with it? There's a lot of great examples here. And then we're going to ask the question, why is a lot of the media really quiet about this stuff? Why do we not hear about the good when we always hear about the bad? I'm Cameron Smith. You're listening to Midday Mobile. Y'all come on back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. I'm Cameron Smith. I'm not Sean, but we're having a good time here. About halfway through the first hour, and we were talking about what we see from the media when it comes to the good things, when it comes to folks actually trying to do their job. I don't know about you, but one of the things that I've seen time and again, forget Republican, Democrat, I mean from the entire political class, is this performance politics. I don't mean performance like high performance like NASCAR. I mean performance like it's just a show. It's not about what they actually do. It's not about how they help us and help our families. It's do you have the hot take on Fox News? Are you going to war with CNN? Are you introducing another resolution of impeachment when high crimes and misdemeanors haven't been introduced? If y'all see a lot of that, and I think you do, I think I do, it makes you wonder what's going on. And with when it comes to Senator Katie Britt, I see an interesting trajectory here, because Joe Biden in the State of the Union, he promised to do things like cure cancer, give us appropriately sized snack foods, all kinds of outlandish stuff. And we know that his track record in terms of the policy areas that were weighing him down when he was a candidate, inflation, immigration, foreign wars, we know the areas that he wasn't any good at. And Katie Britt gets on, delivers the Republican response to the State of the Union. It's always harder when it's a, you know, a situation without an audience. There's no feedback. I'm not going to argue that that went well. But she didn't sit there and just decide, well, I'm upset that it didn't go great. She put her head down and got to work. And I wondered why I hadn't heard about that. Why do these things not get out there? I looked at J.D. Vance from Ohio when he became the vice president nominee. What were we talking about? What did the media want us to discuss? It wasn't all of his policy ideas. It was childless cat ladies and whether or not he had sex with a sofa. Yeah, you heard that right. There's a Vox article. I saw the headline. It was just clarifying that he didn't have sex with a sofa. Yeah, yeah, that's what our national dialogue is about. When it comes to discussing what our leaders are doing, we're just clarifying that they're not having relations with the furniture. Actually, what got me focused on this issue was Alabama Democratic Vice Chair Tabitha Eisner. I've gone back and forth with her on X, you know. She's a rank and file liberal. She has very different policy ideas than those of us who are conservative will. Let's just leave it at that. But she wrote, quote, "This is a solid proposal. I'd prefer a solution that doesn't rely on employers and that doesn't make parents pay up front and wait on reimbursement, but it's a step forward nonetheless. More of this, please." When I saw that, I said, well, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. Wait a minute. What's she doing? And it turns out that she was talking about something that Senator Britt had done with Senator Tim Kaine, who's a Democrat from Virginia. It's called the Child Care Availability and Affordability Act. And it basically enhances tax credits and some deductions to make child care more affordable. Now, for those of you who are listening to me this Friday at work, and you have kids and you're saying, actually, childcare is something that I really do care about. And especially in the summer when you got to figure that out. I know sometimes it's a string of camps. It's It's going to visit relatives. It's doing a lot of different stuff. But for working families, childcare matters. And so I see this. I see a Democrat saying, hey, this is a thing. And then I said, well, okay, this is a one-off, because working to get things done, particularly when you work with a Democrat, is, you know, that's difficult. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is in danger of looking like leadership from somebody in politics. And I looked in and I said, wait a minute. She also, Britt also paired with Senator Chris Murphy on legislation requiring age verification for social media. Wait a minute. We just talked about this at the beginning of the show, about screens and social media and the impact that it's having, that it's making our kids weird. It's making them depressed. It's making them anxious. This is biology, folks. This isn't just bullies online. It's overwhelming for a developing brain to have that flood of information, that sort of sensory stimulation. It's just too much. And so I get it. Reasonable minds can differ whether you want to have age verification on that stuff. But Senator Britt's saying, hey, this is something I've heard that's important. It's important to families. It's important to families like hers, like mine, like many of yours. And she's working with a Democrat who said, yeah, I can find common ground on that. And that's something that families across America are concerned about. That's a discussion I want to have at the federal level. It involves interstate commerce. Many of these companies aren't in Alabama, they're based in California. So Alabamians, people in the South, they have very little say-so of, hey, how does this work? How are you protecting kids who are in this stuff? And I think that kind of thing matters. It absolutely implicates interstate commerce. And so I saw that. Then there was Britt working with Maggie Hassan and Tina Smith to introduce the Rural Obstetrics Readiness Act. Again, this is unsexy stuff. This is talking about the capacities of rural healthcare facilities to provide obstetric care. I get it. You're already falling asleep. However, let me put a different lens on that. Alabama has the highest maternal mortality rate in America because there are a lot of women in rural Alabama that get pregnant. And then if there's a complication related to that pregnancy in an area where they can't quickly access care, it matters. So working again across the aisle. So I'm seeing this. And then I ask myself, what's going on here? I know most of y'all don't know this, but when politicians want to get the word out, we get these press releases in our inbox. Those are who are in the media. Sean gets them. I get them. Reporters get them. And it's just a blast. And I see those, but most of those kind of get ignored. They're just quotes from the politicians, the summary of the legislation, yay. And it doesn't get in the mainstream conversation. And what I'm concerned about is we're missing not only this, but there's a whole litany of these things. So not just that, hey, here's a story about Britt being a big tent Republican trying to get things actually accomplished, to do the job that Alabama elected her to do, which is go to Washington and legislate, hold regulators accountable. That's the job. That's the job description. But what we see from our political class is the incentive is to go to Washington to be a talking head on Fox News, to go to Washington to be a talking head on CNN. Or in the state of Alabama, the other news outlets. That's not the job. I can go down the list, bipartisan efforts, access to breast cancer screenings, increased savings capacity for middle-class families. Even, hey, here's one, Department of Homeland Security, you know, can better fit female agents. Body shapes aren't the same. I get it that this is not exactly sexy stuff. We would rather talk about a future unburdened by what has been. We'd rather go after Harris. We'd rather talk about, hey, has anybody seen Joe? Whenever we see him now, it's just we're waiting for how many mistakes are going to come out there. How much is he diminished? Those are easy things to talk about. But here's the thing. We can't say with a straight face that we want excellent leaders. This is the whole legacy media. All my colleagues over at AL.com, all the folks that, let's be honest, have a left of center bias in what they report and write. I'm not saying that's everybody, but it's predominantly that way. And this is the stuff that scares them. They would rather make fun of Brit and say, hey, your State of the Union response was really, really bad. They'd rather talk about when Senator Tuberville sticks his foot in his mouth. But they don't want to look at this because this is scary. Imagine that Republicans and Democrats worked together and had some good ideas that benefited people in the real world instead of creating bombastic headlines for social media and cable news. Follow the money, folks. It's not hard to understand what the motives are. But if we continue to focus the lens on all the weirdo crap, all the stuff that we see that just makes us uncomfortable, that's like, ugh, makes my skin crawl. Yeah. You're going to get clicks, likes, views, all that fun stuff. I know how to do that. I know how to scare you. I know, you know, if I come out and I start talking about, well, World War III is imminent, you know, they're going to come for your guns. They're going to come for your children. Hey, y'all hear this narrative. You know that. Then you don't actually think and ask, well, hey, what should we do about those things? What should we do about foreign affairs? What's the game plan? How do we, if I just focus on scaring you, you care less about what my responses are to what we should actually do about those fears. And that's what's happened largely with the political class. And I'm not an exception to that. I'd love to lecture all of my liberal colleagues in the media on this, but I praising the nuances of bipartisan policy leadership in the dead zone of an election year, it doesn't generate those clicks, likes, and rage views. I would much rather point out that Harris is a radical liberal, that Waltz is a socialist, and riff on that all day long. But the point is, that doesn't actually do anything. I'm talking to folks in the South. I'm talking to folks in Alabama. The vast majority of you just simply agree with that. Okay, cool. You might like to hear it. It might affirm you and say that, hey, your views are correct. But what about the job that people are doing who represent you? Are they doing a good job, and does it matter? And if it doesn't, what are we doing? What's the problem here? So politics is a context part. I'm not saying everybody has to be nice, but we absolutely need to focus when people are doing the right thing and the American Republic is functioning like it should, where somebody's maintaining their principles and finding ways to move the ball, we need to champion that. We need to talk about that. We need to share it with our friends. If we're not doing that, we're not serious and we're just whiny. And I don't want to be a whiner. We've got to take a break. I'm Cameron Smith. You're listening to Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. I'm Cameron Smith. Happy to have y'all here today. And as always, anytime I get to talk to you guys, it is a pleasure because the broadcast area for this show and this station, man, I just love you guys. I love everything about Lower Alabama. It is one of the best places that God ever made. And actually, after being in Washington, D.C., I'm fairly sure that God, if he had the choice, would just live in the Gulf of Mexico. I think it's a great place. And y'all are great people down there. You're the anti-Thai people. And I love that. I like the chill. I like the Jimmy Buffett culture. It is fantastic. So y'all keep it up. My house is full of art that I bought at the art studio down on Dauphin Island. I know some of you guys know exactly where that is, but we have it everywhere in our house. So I'm really glad to be with you guys. I'm just wrapping up the conversation about, again, using Katie Britt as an example of somebody that's saying, I'm going to go back to the big tent mindset. Even though it's not popular right now, I'm going to do it. I'm going to risk political capital. And what I appreciate about this more than anything, when I worked for Jeff Sessions, I still remember the name of the staffer who had come down into the, in the Dirksen Senate office building and tell us why we couldn't do conservative things. And it was always, well, we're waiting until the right time. There was a time when we would fight and a time when we would do the thing, but it wasn't today. And that always made me furious, because it was, if we wanted to do conservative things, we had to wait for the right time. If we wanted to spend money, we could do it today. And what I see is that kind of mindset of wait, 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 and spend your political capital at some time in the future is dumb. You have political capital so you can spend it now, so you can do things, great, great things for the people you represent. That was one of my big gripes with McConnell. Sessions, by contrast, he heard folks loud and clear on topics like immigration. He said, what can I do to help? What can I do to advance this, regardless of how unpopular it was with his colleagues in Washington? That's one of the reasons I always respected Jeff Sessions, was because he didn't hold his hand up into the wind to see which way the wind was blowing to decide what he believed. And those type of individuals are a lot harder to find right now. And to watch Katie Britt say, I'm going to work with Democrats, I know that I don't get any benefit for that. Well, guess what? One of the greatest tax reforms of all times, the 1986 tax reforms between Reagan and Tip O'Neill, guess what? Tip O'Neill was a Massachusetts Democrat. If Reagan didn't have Tip O'Neill on board, that didn't happen. You didn't usher in one of the greatest periods of prosperity in American history. And this is something that we just got to get over. We need each other. I'm looking at the polling. We'll talk about that a little bit on the other side of the next half of the show. But it's split. The country's split. We're very much divided. And I don't mean that in the sense that, like, we hate each other. It's just that about half the country's Republican, about half the country's Democrat. Yeah, there's some swing voters kind of around that middle, but it's pretty well split. So if you actually want to fill out the job description, if you want to make sure as a political leader that you're actually doing things that matter back home, you're probably going to have to work with Democrats. That's just the truth. And we make a mistake when we say, well, all Democrats are evil. Anytime you work with a Democrat, you're working with a socialist. And if that's the attitude, then I guess we're done. I see Jason over there. I didn't vote for Britt to give away the tax dollars. Well, yeah. I think that kind of idea of, well, Kane's a loon. Yeah, sure. Tim Kaine in Virginia. I disagree with him 95% of the time. But a policy with families that supports people. Jason, I hear you. But the idea that this isn't relevant to people in Alabama is ridiculous. I know people in Alabama this matters to. Now, you can say, well, it's not the government's job to support people having kids. All right, I hear you. However, the policies that matter to families, we absolutely have a compelling government interest in engaging, because that's the future of society. So if we say, well, policies that impact families, the government should stay out of that. Okay, I get it. A strict libertarian minimalist perspective of, well, we don't want to engage the government at all. Okay, I hear you. That's certainly an option. But I think there's a fine balance here. I think there's the government shouldn't be our genie. It shouldn't be there to give us goodies. Let's be honest, Republicans have fallen into that. Trump is not against that. He likes the idea of spending. He'll tell you that he's not actually a fiscal conservative. He said that repeatedly. I think that's part of the problem. But to Jason, I would respond, tax dollars don't belong to the government. Jason, the way you're talking about it is that the tax dollars belong to the government, and that Britt is somehow, by refusing to take them from people, she's giving away money. Well, I'll tell you something, that's the way Democrats think. They think tax dollars are the same thing as government spending, that if I give you a tax break, I'm spending money. I absolutely, as a conservative, reject that and think that is wild, because letting you keep your money can't be, it just simply can't be spending. That's insane. I'm saying I refuse to take it, and so that's spending somehow. Mm-mm. Nope, can't play ball there, Jason. We'll do an election recap in the next hour. I really want to get all the details ironed out there. We got the news coming up. Thank you for hanging with me. We got another hour. It's going to be fun. I'm Cameron Smith. You're listening to Midday Mobile.